Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast, and sorry about the somewhat unfortunate name that we've chosen for this, Making You Stick. No comment on that. But while the title may be a little bit corny, I think this is an important topic and worthy of some discussion. Because there are lots of situations out there where your success or your failure rides on how well you can communicate about yourself. You know, think about a job interview or writing an essay for college or for grad school or simply lobbying for a promotion at work. You know, what all these situations have in common is that you've got to find a way to use your ideas to set yourself apart. You know, you've got to stand out in some way. And so that's the mission of this podcast, is to show you how to use some of the ideas from Made to Stick to stand out in these really important situations. And I want to start in kind of an unusual place. I want to start in a marketplace of ideas that's incredibly crowded and competitive, and there are literally thousands of people jockeying for attention. It's online dating. So here's what I did. I went to Match.com, the website, and I looked at over 1,000 different personal ads for singles. I looked at women. I looked at men. I looked at old people. I looked at young people. And what I was curious about is, here's a situation where people are competing purely for attention. You know, you're trying to grab the eye of the person who might just be your soulmate. That's pretty important. And there's a lot of competition out there. And so how do people set themselves apart in this situation? Well, as many of you will know, there's kind of two primary elements of an online dating profile. One is a photo, you know, and the community norm is that you should run a photo from, say, 10 years and 20 pounds ago. So you've got that photo, and then you've also got a headline. And the headline is a one-sentence zinger to try to lure people in to learn more about you. And so given the stakes here, folks, you know, you're trying to find that soulmate out there, you would expect these headlines to just be fantastic. You would expect them to be emotional and witty and intelligent. They should be like little poems on the web. So let me share with you a couple of the poems that I found on the web. Here's one of them. Hey. That was the headline in its entirety. Hey. And maybe it's as clear to you as it is to me that if hey is your headline, you better be pretty good looking. Or another one was unique. Not quite. That was actually one of the more common headlines I found on Match.com. So notice what's happening here. These bland headlines are doing nothing to differentiate the people involved. They're abstract, and abstraction is the kiss of death in any situation where you've got to stand out. So what's the solution? Well, get more concrete. Let me share with you two of the more inspiring headlines I found on Match.com. One young woman said this. She said, "Sour cream and chives potato chips are my crystal meth." Okay, you know, that may not be your cup of tea, but at least it says something about this person. It helps them stand apart. A 30 or 40-something man said this in his headline. He said, "Athletic math nerd looking for someone to hum Seinfeld intro music with." Now that is just about perfect. I imagine you have got a mental image of that person in your mind right now, created purely from a sentence that he authored for Match.com. Now, even if you don't want to date that mental image that's in your head right now, you've got to agree that that is effective differentiation. He has managed to set himself apart. And for those women out there who are looking for a man like that, he has managed to draw their attention. So I think that's our motivation in situations that look nothing like online dating, is to paint a picture of who we are and what makes us special. You know, let's start with job applications. You know, chances are, whether you like it or not, in the next few years, you'll be applying for a job. Maybe it's because, you know, you decided to skip companies, or maybe you're applying for a promotion at your own job. Maybe you got fired for listening to podcasts all the time. Who knows? But regardless, you may have to endure a job interview. You hate them, I hate them. But let's talk a little bit about how to do well. Let me start by proposing a thought experiment for you. Suppose that back in your school days, you'd been assigned to write a paper. And the topic that you needed to defend was that Lou Gerstner, because of his unique skills and mindset, was the only man who could have saved IBM in the early 1990s. Now, how would you go about writing that paper? Well, we all know how to do that, right? We develop a couple of key arguments about why Gerstner's skills fit the role so well. So maybe it's things like, you know, in his time at American Express earlier in his career, he had learned to act on customer insights, like when he launched the gold and the platinum credit cards. And, you know, having worked at other Fortune 100 companies, not just Amex, but also RJR and Nabisco, he'd actually used IBM as a customer. And so he had some experience, and he was frustrated by how IBM was always trying to get him to buy products rather than helping him with his needs as an exec in a more holistic way. So you'd methodically build a case for Gerstner using stories and specific examples like these, just like a lawyer would in the courtroom. You know, here's the argument the defense will make, and here's Exhibit A and B and C. What you wouldn't do is turn in a paper that just listed the names and dates of the things that Gerstner did in his life. You know, he received a bachelor's degree in engineering from Dartmouth College in 1963. He joined McKinsey & Company Consulting in 1965, where he worked in the role of a director. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. That's not an argument. That's an encyclopedia entry. But here's the twist. That's exactly what you're doing when you allow your resume to shape your interview. Now, resume is not an argument. But interviewing for a job or writing that college essay requires you to make an argument for why your skills and your mindset are uniquely suited for that job at Google, or why your experiences and your passions make you a perfect student for Cornell. So my advice is to think of your interview or your essay in terms of a series of examples or stories that you want to tell. You know, Exhibit A, B, C, and D. And abstraction is the kiss of death in these situations, just like it was on Match.com. So let's say you're making an argument for yourself as an innovative marketer. You know, in resume speak, you'd say, at my last job at Duracell, I created some fresh initiatives for the product marketing plan, and those led to a 25% increase in revenue across 5 quarters. That won't stick. Instead, just tell the story. You know, unpack it. One day it dawned on you that the people don't ever go to the grocery store looking for Duracell batteries. They're not on people's shopping lists. So unless people are visually confronted with them, unless they come face to face, they just won't remember that they need AAA batteries for the remote control. And so you cooked up this idea for an end cap display at the end of the aisles that people simply couldn't miss as they moved their shopping carts around. And by the way, your boss hated the idea. You know, maybe he was a notorious doubter of end caps, and he thought it was a big waste of money. But you persisted, you designed an economical beta test, and poof, sales went up 25%, and you rolled it out, blah, 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 blah. Now, it's even better if you have to tell, you know, the story of how you overcame these skeptics and these obstacles to succeed in the end. Now, the story doesn't have to have a lot of drama or humor. It just has to be a story. You know from the book that stories stick. So translate those resume bullets into stories. Ultimately, what you want to leave people with is not a resume or an essay, but a picture, a snapshot of who you are. And, you know, not coincidentally, it's a snapshot that makes you look a whole lot like the kind of person that they're looking for. Let me give you an example. So last year, I got an email from a guy who'd read Made to Stick. And he told me, look, I'm leaving IBM after working here for 20 years. And it's been so long since I've looked for a job, I've forgotten what it's like to interview and write cover letters. So, I need some help. Will you help? And I said, sure. I was kind of intrigued by this. What the heck? Now, I have since gotten out of the resume consultation business, so don't get any ideas here. But anyway, this guy, let's call him Frank, he forwards me a copy of his resume and cover letter, and they are both profoundly dull, let's say. I understood very little of what was in it. There was lots of jargon, but I had the vague sense that he'd been involved in software product management. So then I had a chance to talk to Frank on the phone, and after hearing his story for about 10 minutes, I realized just how precious his skill set was. He was a handoff guy. And what I mean is, you know, with a software product, it starts in the minds of marketers, you know, anticipating a market need, and then it goes to the development team, where the product is actually built, and then it goes back to the marketers to think about, you know, channels and promotional aspects, and finally on to the salespeople who would close the deals. Now, this is a notoriously hard process. You know, all of us know how often software products are delayed, installed, and yet this guy, Frank, had never missed a release deadline. Never missed one. That fact was nowhere on his resume, nowhere on his cover letter. I couldn't believe it. If it had been me, I would have run that in 48-point type, you know, in lieu of a resume. But he was so good at this handoff because he had been both a developer and a marketer. And so he understood both sides of that handoff very, very well. Now, finally, as a little bit of extra color, I swear I'm not making this part up. It turned out that Frank had been an athlete. And in fact, he'd gotten a track scholarship to college. And take a wild guess what his event was. Yeah, the 4x100 relay team. He was the anchor leg. So incredibly, Frank was a handoff guy, both literally and metaphorically. I mean, talk about a snapshot. You see what I mean here? When the recruiter goes back to the home office, everybody's going to seem like a blur except for this guy, Frank. Now, the mistake Frank made was the mistake that a lot of us make. We tend to think that people are going to get our resume or our essay and they're going to see what's special about us. You know, they're just going to see through to our souls. And heck, you know, maybe you'll be lucky enough to get someone that has that soul sight. But I think we just can't count on that. And so here, let's come back around to how you can set yourself apart at work. You know, I know a lot of you listening to this are well past the college application days and you're not trying to date online and you're not applying for jobs. You just want to succeed in your current organization. So how do you make sure that you can get the advancement you want? Well, you have to find a way to stand out. Now, there's a buzz phrase that's gotten some attention in the past few years, and that's the notion of building a leadership brand. I worked for the executive education branch of Duke at one time, and we would actually teach executives how to cultivate their own leadership brand. You know, Volvo's, they're known for being safe, and Ivory Soap is known for being pure. What is Jane Kensington, the executive, known for? Now, I have to confess to you that I kind of hate this phrase, leadership brand. It seems sort of gimmicky, and I don't like the connotation that we have to think of ourselves as products that need advertising. I mean, after all, no one has ever talked about needing a spousal brand, you know, to define yourself at home. You know, hey, honey, I'm resolving to be the husband who's always there for you in your time of need. And so I've decided to start wearing this cape around the home, you know, as a symbol of my husband brand. Yeah, you know, so let's get away from this kind of clunky phrase, leadership brand, and just focus on the underlying issue, which I think is a good one. Because here's the simple fact. Monitoring your abilities and your talents is a very small part of other people's to-do list. You know, no one has it on their Outlook task list to think deeply about what Susan is good at, right? And worse, the glimpses that they get of your talents are all anchored in the context of your current position. And notice that creates a kind of trap, because think about it. When you're really good at your current job, what you're doing is building a fantastic case that you're really good at your current job. But you want to move up. Let me give you an example of how this can work. I worked at an educational publishing company that had lots of graphic designers on staff. And they were great at illustrating the concepts of calculus or government or whatever. There was this one graphic designer I remember who had, you know, a great artistic gift. He had a really sharp, clean, kind of analytical style. But when it came time for the company to find an art director who would then manage multiple graphic designers, raw artistic talent really wasn't the number one item on the list. The company needed someone who was good at planning and managing, not just making graphics. Well, this guy realized that, and so he went out of his way as an artist to find ways that he could get involved in planning type activities. So he was constantly pitching in, when the managers were assembling Gantt charts of scheduling or were making product development schedules or calendars or things like that. And so when a job opened up for an art director, this guy was the obvious choice. Now, notice something about this. No one at this company would have known that this person had these talents unless he consciously, deliberately showed them to us. I mean, after all, there was nothing in his calculus artwork that suggested he'd be a good manager. He had to first realize what talents would be needed at the next level up, and second, go out of his way to show us that he had that set of talents that it would require. Now, does that mean he was cultivating a leadership brand? I don't know, maybe. But what he definitely was doing was building a case for himself. Every time he helped out with a Gantt chart, for instance, he was essentially offering Exhibit A to the court for his candidacy, for the next position. Now, notice what all of these situations have in common. They all ultimately boil down to an individual creating a snapshot of themselves in the minds of others so that they can stand out, so that they can get the opportunity that they're looking for. Whether that's an opportunity to join the incoming class at Dartmouth, or an opportunity for a new job or for a promotion, or even an opportunity for a date. And these people are really taking the initiative here. And so that's my final comment, is you've got to be the person to create that snapshot. You know how in political season, candidates are always fretting about whether they're being defined by the other guy. Well, it's your job to define yourself. And how do you create that case? How do you create that snapshot? Well, you've got to store up those compelling examples and stories of what you're all about, of what you can do. Back to the Lou Gerstner research paper example. You've got to make an argument that's backed up by concrete examples and stories. And if you don't already have a store case of those, go out and look for opportunities like that art director did. So thanks for checking out this podcast. I hope it was some help to you. And by the way, if you have any luck creating a snapshot in this way, I'd really like to hear about it. So just shoot me an email to dan@madetostick.com. Good luck out there.